Hello and welcome back to the Edge of the Box podcast, a podcast by WhoScored.com, sponsored by Ultimate Fan. And if you want to find out more about what Ultimate Fan offer, then the link is in the description. Have a little click on it and you'll find out more about the game. I'm your host, Dan Bardell, joined by George Ellick and Sam Tye this week to look at the Premier League action coming up this weekend. Today we're going to have a little look at Arsenal v Aston Villa. Can't say I'm massively looking forward to that one. And Chelsea against Everton as well. We'll, of course, rattle through our predictions as well, and we'll also have a little bit of Manchester United shot bingo. And just on the subject of predictions, let's start with it. George, I'll come to you first. A new leader. It was short-lived for Sam and Jonathan. A week at the top, but then
last week when you got knocked off the top, I think you left it about 35 minutes till you mentioned it.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I don't think you can call this a new leader. Like, I think when I think when someone's been top for a whole season and they get taken off top spot for a week, then they hit top spot again. It's not a new leader. It's just it's a returning leader. Yeah.
But that is mentality monster stuff, though, isn't it? Being knocked off the top, questions being seriously asked about my prediction ability, and I come back with a resounding 11. That's big boy stuff.
The analysis that I'm reading is that everyone's expecting you now you're top again to get a bit dizzy and to fall away. Yeah. So
yeah,
they're asking if you've got the bottle to win this league.
I'm just glad, Dan. I was watching the stream last week. Must have been a very early morning. You look like you'd had a few sleepless nights that week.
I was ill.
You'd been knocked off top spot.
I was ill as well.
I'm just glad that the 85 hours you've committed to getting those predictions right actually paid off. I heard that's exactly how long you spent.
One of the predictions of the season in Sheffield United 2, Chelsea 2, I will say. You know, that's a big call leading up to the Premier League weekend. And I'm sure I've got equally as ludicrous calls that may come off this week as well. Let's start with Arsenal against Aston Villa, then the David Platt derby. George, we spoke about Kai Havertz a little bit a few weeks ago and, you know, the refinements to his game, what he's done for Arsenal, actually the, you know, continued improvement since he's been there. But there's another ex-Chelsea player sitting in that midfield for Arsenal as well. There is something quite satisfying in some ways, and I've got nothing against Chelsea, and I said this on another podcast. Chelsea are languishing in mid-table. Two players that were very underappreciated at Stamford Bridge are now part of a team that's heading or challenging heavily for the title now. Jorginho was a smart pickup at the time, I thought. Havertz, I think people scoffed at the price a little bit, but there's no doubt that the two of them are having an impact in this Arsenal title challenge.
Yeah, they definitely are. It's interesting because you say they're underappreciated. I'm not entirely sure who they're underappreciated by.
I think Chelsea fans, I didn't think liked either of them, to be honest.
I think, you know, Kai Havertz scored a winner in the Champions League final for Chelsea, and I think that will always have him in a certain regard for Chelsea fans. But I do take the point that I think when the fee that he went for was kind of made public, I think there were very few Chelsea fans who were upset to see him go for that amount of money. With Jorginho, I think he's a player that had a long period of time where he was very popular at Chelsea, and maybe he was just seen as being not necessarily what they needed there and then. I do definitely think they were both underappreciated by the decision makers at Chelsea, whether that was Todd Bowley or whoever was making the decisions at the time. This was before they seemed to appoint about seven different directors of football in different guises, whoever made the decision to get rid of them both. And, you know, with Chelsea, I always think it's a weird position when you try and judge them, because there's no denying that the quality of their squad means they should be a lot better than they are. But there's also a soft centre. Like, we saw it again against Sheffield United in a game where they probably were fortunate to be 2-1 ahead, but they conceded very late. They conceded late against Burnley. Obviously, it was them who scored late against United to win that game 4-3, but they'd already squandered a two-goal lead. And I think certainly in the case of Jorginho, having someone who's really been there and done it is missing from Chelsea, and it's been a massive benefit to Arsenal. You know, they go into this title race with a player who's experienced a lot, both in Serie A and at Chelsea previously, both in the Champions League and in the Premier League, has won a great deal. And having him be able to bring him into the fold, who both in terms of a footballing perspective, where Arsenal dominate possession in most games, he's obviously so competent on the ball, but he's also, he can be that kind of hatchet man, and he knows when to commit a foul. He knows how to be cute. You know, I saw in the running order that it mentioned that it's seen, you know, Jorginho's arrival into the side has seen the best coming out of Declan Rice. I'm not sure I agree with that. Like, I still personally...
No, it's not.
I don't know. I prefer Rice playing as the holding man and the kind of player that possession generally goes to. I don't necessarily think he's as well suited to playing kind of on that left hand side of the three. Even though I know that
do you not think in certain it, games, in certain games it works better.
He's doing very well. Though, to be fair.
But he was doing brilliantly beforehand. Like, I don't think, you know, when you say getting the best out of him, I think we can say that Kai Havertz's move up front or in a more advanced position has got the best out of him because he wasn't performing particularly well on the left-hand side of the midfield three. And also, I do think with Ødegaard playing, you know, having the positional freedom that he has, it does mean that Rice can often kind of shuffle back into the double pivot with Jorginho as well. But, you know, it's not as if Rice was underperforming when he was playing in that central role. I do think that Rice, certainly at West Ham, we didn't see enough of his kind of ball-playing tendencies and his attacking threat, which maybe we get more of now on that left-hand side. But, you know, this is the sign of a team who are in a very good position when we're nitpicking as to whether or not Declan Rice is better in the middle or on the left-hand side of a three when he's probably been having a 9 out of 10 season in both.
Back on Havertz there, I look back at the summer and it was pretty widely reported and briefed that Kai Havertz had been bought as the left-sided number 8. I think we're all working under that impression. It seemed like that was the plan. Obviously, that's not the plan right now. The plan is he plays up front and the team is much better for it. He is much better for it. I actually look back at that idea and think, what the hell were they thinking? Like, I remember at the time thinking, interesting, could work. And now I look back at it, now that I've seen it, and I've seen it go back, and I'm like, honestly, was that ever going to work? Like, did they actually genuinely believe that? It's not. I'm not really criticising them. You can have an idea. And actually, I praise Arteta for basically after 3 months going, yeah, no, not happening. A very simple metric you can use is like, you know, Arsenal midfielders. You expect Arsenal midfielders to get lots of touches and string lots of passes together, right? Because they're a dominant possession team. Even in those games where Kai Havertz is playing as a central midfielder, he's clocking up that 25, 30 passes. He doesn't connect the team from the centre of the pitch. Whether he likes it or not, he's better at getting on the end of stuff, making runs, shadowing into the box. And like, proof's in the pudding as a striker. It's 6 goals and 5 assists as a striker in the last 2 months for Arsenal. Yeah. And as a Chelsea, he was probably always better as that striker, even though he didn't really like it. At Leverkusen, he was a 10, pure and simple. Bringing him that deep and trying to get him to connect the team in the way that they tried to, I do look back at it and think, wow, that was bizarre. That was weird. And I'm glad for their sake that they moved on from it very, very fast and kind of understood that wasn't really going to work.
His best aspect for me is his link-up play. So it makes sense if you're good at link-up play to be higher up the pitch. Playing as a kind of a free eight, which is what I guess he was going to do. That just, I wish that thumb wouldn't come up every time I move my hands.
Was it because I lifted my coffee mug?
I don't know, it came on my screen. Every time I move my hand, for those who are listening via audio, I seem to get a thumb come up on the middle of the photo. Maybe our producer, Dan Rollinson, can tell us what that's all about afterwards. But yeah, Havertz, to get back to that, because that's what we should be talking about, not the thumb, is that, you know, for someone who that's his best aspect, that's not going to happen. Playing as a number eight, so you're right, Sam. It was a bit of a strange. It wasn't really an experiment, was it? Because 3 months is a fair chunk of the season. But you're right, Arteta deserves credit for moving away from it. And in a parallel universe, you know, the middle of this Arsenal team, Jorginho, Rice, and Havertz. The parallel universe that could have all been playing for Chelsea. So Chelsea fans would be absolutely delighted that they're doing so well for Arsenal. I'm sure about that. Talking of smart pickups, which I've already used that term once, George. Trossard. I was thinking this a few weeks ago. It's always him to score when he's on the pitch, whether he starts, whether he comes on. It always feels like Trossard scores. Important goal in midweek against Bayern Munich. He's the master of important goals as well. But there's a real, really, really valuable point that I haven't seen brought up elsewhere for whoever did this script. I think it was Sam from Who Scored. It's a really valid point, I think, and I'd not thought of this. Not that I'm the oracle of coming up with things about football, but you know, they picked up Trossard, Ben White, Rice, Jorginho, Havertz, Raya, all from Premier League teams. That's an interesting transfer trend, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, especially because we're kind of told that there's no value in the Premier League because of the hyperinflated prices and the rest of things. And we're also told that you can't really, this is definitely a line that I've peddled before, that you can't really get value from Brighton. Obviously, contract situations can affect that. But Arsenal are showing not only that you can recruit well from the Premier League, but also that, you know, maybe the new owners of Manchester United, I'm sure, will try and change the strategy there. But United should listen to this, where you don't have to go out and pay premium prices for players in the midst of a purple patch of form. It's just not the way to go about your business. You have to look at stylistically what you're after from players and go after players who have shown that they're able, they've shown their talent, they've shown they're capable of performing, but they don't necessarily have to be elite at the time of purchase. And that's what Arsenal have exploited really well. They've brought potential in some cases, you know, certainly with Ben White, but also with Havertz, and they're not scared to spend big sums on players who maybe haven't hit the heights their talent suggests that they can and should do and probably will do in an Arsenal shirt. But then players like Trossard, who, you know, Trossard is now 29 years old. He's a very different profile to what we're used to seeing from Arsenal signings. But when you look at his season so far, he scored 8 Premier League goals, which, I mean, as you say, it does kind of feel like he comes on and scores whenever he does so. But 8 goals in the Premier League from one just over 1,000 minutes is an unbelievable return from a player who doesn't start many games and isn't even a striker. You know, Kai Havertz has scored 9 goals this season, and even that's a pretty good haul given he hasn't played up front for the most part. So, Trossard, a very smart pickup, and to me, just an example of it, you know, Arsenal not just playing Football Manager, not going and seeing like who's available, who can we afford, who's really good. You know, it's working out. We need a player who can play across the three. We need someone of Trossard's profile. Because of his age, he's probably going to be available. We're not going to get 10 years out of him, but he can certainly be an important squad player going forward, and it's worked incredibly well.
Yeah. Do you think he should start more games, Sam? I mean, he's low maintenance, isn't he? Isn't he, Trossard? He is multifunctional, and that is becoming increasingly important. That's another trend in football and the Premier League over the last few years. The fact that he can cover so many positions is really, really important. But do you think he's done enough to be starting more games, or do you think Arteta just looks at it and says, well, he's doing well the way we're using him, so there's no need to actually change anything?
Yeah, super subs don't want to be super subs, do they? They never do. And Trossard is a super sub, just like Olivier Giroud was a super sub. And they absolutely hate it when you call them that, because that means that you are getting boxed into a role, which means you only get 15 minutes. And obviously players want to play all the time. And Trossard probably feels like he deserves more minutes, more starts. The goals he scores certainly suggest that. But I think Arteta's smart enough to realise that it's a case of using your squad and matching it up to the opposition on a game-by-game basis. And depending on your opponent depends on if Trossard should really be starting, because he and Martinelli are essentially vying for a position right on the left wing for the most part. Havertz has more or less got the striker role locked down. Jesus is the backup. Saka is untouchable. The midfield three is the midfield three. That gives you the left wing. Trossard and Martinelli are different players. So, you know, Martinelli has got this incredible speed, and his ability to hit the byline and work crosses from that area is different to the way Trossard shoots from range and plays the left-wing role. So what do you need? What's the situation? What's the venue? What's the opponent? And that's what good squads do, isn't it? They mix and match depending on their opponent, depending on fitness. And Trossard is just one of the guys. I guess that's a compliment I can pay him. I didn't really think he'd make this much of an impact at Arsenal. I wasn't sure they'd get the value, because, George, you mentioned the fact that, you know, contract situations can affect value from Brighton. Obviously, it can. He was still 20 to 25 million, wasn't he, Trossard? Mm-hmm. He wasn't a small amount of money. And I was like, oh, are you gonna squeeze that out of him? They have. They absolutely have. He is one of the guys, and fair play to him.
Look back as well, and this is very much sticking on the Chelsea and Arsenal theme, and we actually are previewing the Chelsea game later, you know, really, because they didn't get Mudrick. If they'd have got Mudrick, you know, yeah, you probably think they wouldn't have gone.
But you probably also think if they'd got, I'd have thought if they got Mudrick would have been a much more successful Premier League player up to this point than he has been at Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, he's gone to Chelsea and, you know, fallen really, like many players who've gone to Chelsea in the last 12 to 18 months have. I don't think it's down to him. You know, it's down to the environment that he's in. And you're right, you know, the Arsenal environment at the moment, probably few better places in Europe or the world to play football at the moment. They've obviously played Bayern in the week, George. I don't know whether you saw this, and, you know, they'll play them again next week. The evolution of Arsenal, you know, I think that was shown in the summer by the fact that they managed to attract Declan Rice, a player who a year before they probably wouldn't have attracted, let's say. Now being linked with Joshua Kimmich, you know, that shows the evolution of Arsenal as well. Imagine throwing him into this team that feels so complete at the moment as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an amazing signing. Again, he is 29 years old, so, you know, possibly not the kind of profile of player that we would expect a team to buy. But similarly, you know, his qualities are, and again, versatility, being able to play in that midfield three or right back if necessary as well, makes him an attractive prospect. And given the way that Arteta likes to play, given Kimmich's ball playing ability and his, well, his ball retention ability, certainly.
Multifunctional as well.
Very multifunctional. Yeah, he would be a decent pickup. So we'd have to see. I mean, it was, I don't know what it is. I mean, I think Arsenal in the Champions League have been a different beast to the Premier League. I'm not sure if maybe because of not getting over the line in the Premier League last season, there's kind of a focus on the league campaign. But again, I thought against Bayern, they weren't at their, you know, at the Emirates this season, they've been consistently so good. And this is a Bayern side who we have to remember have been in woeful form in the Bundesliga. Yeah. And yet they weren't really the dominant force within it. And I think they're going to find it difficult next week to go and get the result they need.
George, I don't know what's going on either. And I'm always reluctant to do this. I'm sure you are too. I hate falling back on old cliches. Mm. But I cannot escape the feeling that the Champions League is that different beast. And the lack of experience on the Champions League stage is actually a factor. I know everyone says it, and you never know if this stuff is true. But like the number of players here at Arsenal who are playing their first ever Champions League campaign, like before the start of the season, Bukayo Saka had never played a single Champions League minute. And the same could be said for Benjamin White, for David Raya. You know, a lot of these guys, even Martin Ødegaard's like exposure to Champions League football would have been very limited.
Saliba play Champions League?
Saliba's got, I think he's got one campaign at Marseille. Yeah. Gabriel might have done it with Lille, but again, it's speckled. It's limited. Yeah. I cannot escape the feeling that these, like that Porto game was nasty and they're just not used to it. And it's a learning curve. And you go back to Pep Guardiola's first 3 years at City. I mean, he was trying to teach those guys how to play Champions League football. They were winning the league and were totally inept on a Tuesday and Wednesday night. And it did not make any sense. And it took him years to get them to learn the emotional stability to actually perform in those environments. And they've done it now, obviously, and they've won it. But it took them absolutely ages. And I just think that might be the case for Arsenal too. And obviously the worrying thing then is that when you go back to a Premier League environment like this weekend, like against a Premier League team at the Emirates, it all returns to normal.
Interesting as well, actually, on that subject, you know, Jesus came on, someone who has got plenty of Champions League experience. He came on and kind of turned that game back in Arsenal's favour. I agree with the sentiments of what you're saying, but actually I think there's good signs in the Champions League. You know, could have gone 2-1 down against Bayern and completely wilted. In years gone by, Arsenal teams would have definitely done that. You know, still got back and got themselves that draw, or as Harry Kane called it in his post match interview, a point. I love it when footballers say a point, and it's obviously there's a second leg to come. I've touched on Gabriel and Saliba there actually, Sam. You know, undoubtedly the best centre back pairing in the Premier League at the current time seems farcical that at the start of the season Gabriel was sat on the bench just a bizarre time in the season. That feels a very long time ago now, doesn't it? That definitely wouldn't happen now. But you know, we got to the 11th of April, they're both fit at the moment, but I guess that feels like the one area that they just can't afford anything to happen, because if that pairing was to get broken up, they're a huge reason of why Arsenal are where they are.
Yeah, I mean they're better equipped in the centre back department this year as opposed to last year. So the drop-off last year was Saliba. He went and Holding was unfortunately tragic.
You were going to be kind and then you came in with a really harsh word.
I couldn't think of another word. So I just said the one I thought, which was tragic. He was tragic and it was a big, big problem.
You could have said he was a holding player. He was holding that position for Saliba.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Kivior now is better, much more equipped for Premier League football, and I would assume would slide in.
But then Gabriel would have to move across, wouldn't he?
If it was Saliba that was injured, if it was Gabriel that was injured, then there. And then you know, Tomiyasu was kind of floating around. I think they're probably better equipped. But no doubt about it, if one of these two goes down, managers don't want to change their centre-back partnerships for a reason. The consistency and the reliability of that position is really important to the spine of a team. If they weren't fit and brilliant all year round, then they wouldn't have put up the numbers they have, which is 24 conceded from 31 games, which is absolutely ridiculous. Brilliant. It's ridiculous. And the XGA as well, the expected goals against, is 21.3. It is, these are genuinely like top five Premier League numbers ever in terms of seasons. I don't think anything's ever going to beat that John Terry-led Jose Mourinho Chelsea season of 14 goals or whatever it was. No. But this is like genuinely very, very good. Although what I will say is that they kind of got given the runaround against Bayern, and it was just weird to see. You know, Saliba lost, I think, every duel that he was involved in the first half and conceded a penalty. And I was like, this is so strange to watch, because Saliba is like the pillar of consistency and excellence. He doesn't make mistakes, William Saliba, in the Premier League. Anyway, so yeah, that's a bit of a shocker midweek, and they'll be looking to bounce back. But over the course of 30-odd games in the Premier League, they've been unerringly good, haven't they?
Yeah, let's talk about the opposition then. I'll come to you as a neutral first, George. An annoying thing for Villa fans at the moment is, you know, the injuries have been there all season. They've been quite consistent. It's gone under the radar. And when Villa have had an injury, it's been a bad one. It hasn't been like they've just had a spell of loads of players out. That hasn't really happened, except for maybe January. But when they get an injury, it's been a bad one. The new trend at Villa, we're talking a lot about trends today, is every time someone comes back from suspension or injury, they lose someone else. So John McGinn comes back from his three-game ban, and then Douglas Luiz manages to go 96 minutes without getting that critical 10th yellow card that would cause him a two-game ban. And then in the last minute of stoppage time, he does pick up that yellow. So he's now missing for two games. As an outsider, someone who, you know, won't follow Villa as closely as Sam and I do, does it feel a sticky moment for Villa generally? That although doing brilliantly, you know, to be fifth, I would have snapped your hand off to be fifth at this stage of the season, knowing that it may be Champions League football as well. But there's no getting away from the fact that Villa are not churning out results and performances in the second half of the season like they were in the first half of the season.
Yeah, I think you've got to put it in context, and often we hold teams and managers to a level beyond expectations pre-season, a level that is hit in the first half of a campaign. And obviously, it wasn't that long ago that we were all sitting here talking about our Aston Villa title challenges. You know,
we put a few teams forward for title challenges, if I recall.
Brighton and Home Albion. It's with Villa, there was that incredible week with the City and the Arsenal games, and suddenly everyone sat up and said, "Hold on, have we got another, not a Leicester, but have we got another kind of title challenger from left field here?" And obviously, it hasn't materialised. That shouldn't take away from the fact that, you know, just because the first half of the season was so good, for Villa to be where they are is an incredible achievement. From Emery, I still think the performances, that there are performances recently that have been pretty good. You know, the Wolves game, you kind of got past them with ease, and they're not a bad side. Obviously, the last game against Brentford was a
silly football.
Exactly. And up, you know, the first 40 minutes or so looked like you were going to win that game comfortably as well. So, yeah, I would say I'm sure there aren't any, but any Villa fans who are getting frustrated or annoyed with Emery because
there will be some. I got them somewhere in their little man cave.
To throw it back to you guys now, I mean, obviously Champions League qualification is the most important thing. But where does the, you know, you've got a European game this evening? How does that? What do you think the priority is now?
I don't know. It's so difficult. I'm glad you went to George first, because it's actually really important to get a neutral's feeling on this at the moment, because we feel very confused and conflicted. I'll speak for everybody. We just don't know. We don't know how to feel right now about the team, because it is starting to look a bit different. And in that case, it's starting to look a bit worrying. And yeah, you're right. Like, the results aren't necessarily being churned out in that kind of like automatic way.
It felt almost robotic, the home form, didn't it, in the first half of the season?
And the performances aren't really coming in either, or at least they're not coming in for 90 minutes. They come in for sort of 25 to 30 minutes, and that's at most. But that's okay for this stage of the season. Like in October, I'm looking for teams that are playing well. I'm looking for good performances that are translatable. In April, you know, with 40 games on the clock for Villa at this point, it really doesn't matter if you play well. Like, we know you can play well. You just need to get the results. And when they start to flag a little bit, it does get a little bit concerning. I do think that Emery showed his hand a little bit with the Man City 11 by essentially fielding Aston Villa B. And by the end of the game, it looked a bit more like Aston Villa C, to be quite honest with you.
I'm not sure we're there in terms of squad numbers.
there was a tacit admission there that game felt not doable.
Does this game feel not doable at the weekend?
Swayed by the fact that Ollie Watkins was injured, and it was just like, well, look, we've got so many games that we need to take 6 points from Wolves and Brentford, City away midweek, no Watkins. That's what it felt like. And professionally speaking, that's not what would have been done. But that's what it felt like to me. And now you've got Lille at home, and it's absolutely massive. Producer Dan Rollinson called it the biggest game of the season so far.
Did it?
On his podcast yesterday.
Oh, I don't watch that.
That I listened to. That tells you the magnitude of the occasion. And Arsenal away, this is probably just me being too self-defeatist. It just feels too difficult without Douglas Luiz and with a fixture pile up. You know,
Douglas Luiz and no Kamara, isn't it? That's your two central midfielders, not there against a very good central midfielder. I think Villa are struggling without Kamara anyway.
Yeah.
Because he's irreplaceable in terms of what he does.
I'm going to say something really stupid. We don't have time for this fixture. We just don't have the capacity for it. Can't play it. Okay? We have to move it.
Well, that's Sunday.
Just can't do it.
I don't think we can do that this late. I'm not sure there's anything we can do. Middlesbrough try and postpone the game and got a points deduction in 96 or 98 or 97. I feel like that about Europe. I just feel like now, I think if we're in an FA Cup or a league, I'm desperate to win a trophy.
Yeah.
If we're in FA Cup still, I'd really be feeling that was important. But I feel like that doesn't impact you as much as Europe does. I mean, to tell you a little story, I got asked to chat. I do talk sport on a Tuesday, and I got asked to change my day to a Thursday. And I was like, I'm sure Thursday's ringing a bell for something. Not sure what it is. Ask my girlfriend if we had anything on. She was like, no. So I changed my day. I've since realised, oh no, missing the Villa game. I just completely forgot. And in some ways, I think that sums up my feeling towards Europe at the moment, which isn't a popular feeling at all. Probably the only person that feels
that's real
like this.
Apathy. I'm not used to hearing that.
The Conference League. My thing is that, I mean, I'm on holiday anyway, so selfishly, I wouldn't be going to the final. But only 9,000 Villa fans actually get to go. So you go and get everyone there like you do for an FA Cup final or a League Cup final. I don't agree with that allocation. I think that's a load of rubbish from UEFA. In that Spurs game, that was the first time all season I felt that Thursday impacted us there. I think that had an effect. Luckily, I think it's better for Villa to be at home before they play Arsenal than it obviously would be if they were away, travelling, etc., and all the stuff that comes like this. But I'm starting to think now that I feel like we don't have the bandwidth and we don't have the depth because of injuries now to handle Europe, and that's affecting Premier League. That's just my opinion.
So, yeah, we're kind of at odds there in terms of the prioritisation of competition, but we agree on the same point, which is Villa do not have the capacity to play all these games. They're like, they do not have the players or the energy left in the legs to play all of these fixtures. And
that's
so
visible by watching them play, isn't it?
Yes. And so basically it comes down to that age-old season-long question of like, what would you prefer? Which we've been asking ourselves and each other all season. What would you prefer? Fourth or a trophy? Fourth or a trophy? Fifth or a trophy? Whatever it is. It's the same damn question. Still applies.
Still fourth for me.
Still trophy for me.
No, Sam, we can't disagree. We mustn't. George, you're going to have to come in with deciding what's more important for Villa, finishing in a Champions League place, which we know fifth still might be, but I still in my head think you've got to be getting fourth just in case. Let's not finish fifth and then miss out because the coefficient messes up in some way. In terms of building a football club for me, that's why I think finishing fourth is more important than getting Champions League. But obviously me and Sam disagree there. Sam doesn't want to build a football club. I think financially...
You're right. Logically, you're right.
Let's get George to decide.
I would say that I would probably... I can understand both, but I personally, even though I enjoy the competitions, I think European competition that isn't elite, isn't the top level. I mean, what are you really winning? You're winning like a best of the rest trophy, really. Whereas I think qualifying for the Champions League, like, you know, like West Ham won it 2 seasons ago, like you're just following West Ham's footsteps. Is that where you want to be? Whereas if you get into the Champions League, not only does that give you an unbelievable experience in terms of going to Champions League games and the rest of it, but also given the fact that we know Villa have very deep pockets, it probably opens up a completely different level of player in terms of recruitment, and it could reroute the whole football club. So I would be Champions League qualification, I'm afraid.
Yeah, put that in your perfect beard and smoke it, Sam. See how you like, those apples.
That's such a nice compliment in the middle of that.
I know, it was trying to be nice.
I'll tell you something about this beard. It's now getting so unruly that yesterday the makeup lady at Sky Studios had to ask me to brush the crumbs of my breakfast out of it.
Oh, no. Hash browns. Good hash browns it's got.
And that was a pan of chocolat.
Okay. You've got to try the hash brown. You've got to have the hash brown. Best hash browns in the business.
Yeah, they're good.
I will. I'll make sure they save a bit in my beard for later as well. We're at that stage.
I was going to call you Rag and Burn, Sam. But I wasn't sure how that would
go. Oh,
yeah. I've done it now, so I might as well have just done it.
Two equally talented and popular people. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. I completely agree with you. Let's talk quickly about Ollie Watkins, George. We've done this before, but another two goal contributions at the weekend against Brentford. Two goals. I'm saying two goal contributions because what I want to say is he's top of the goal contributions chart. I think 28 overall now this season. When you think who he is playing for and some of the players that are in the Premier League that play every week, you know, they're exceptional numbers.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's partly the player. It's just the player he is, isn't it? Which is a massive compliment. He is someone, you know, you get a lot of attacking players who are creators. You get a lot of attacking players who are pure goal scorers. In Watkins, you've got someone who is so integral to every single phase of attacking play that Aston Villa put out when he's on the pitch, that he's totally essential. And that is a pretty rare breed. I do think the goal contributions table is something that not many people care about unless the player in the team that you support happens to top it.
I am. Arguably, it's more important than finishing fourth.
But Watkins is clearly someone who, in a Harry Kane-less era, his star would probably shine a bit brighter because he would be England's starting striker, you would think. So, a wonderful player and essential to what Villa are doing. And another player where, you know, if Villa were to qualify for the Champions League, it wouldn't surprise me if Watkins does make a bit of a splash next season in that competition.
But does he make the combined 11? That is the big question. I don't know whether either of you have already seen the combined 11. Yeah, okay, some ruins any potential. For
I haven't seen it, but he definitely makes it.
Oh, okay, sorry, I apologise. George, have you seen the combined 11? I mean, do you two not read the script?
I haven't,
get sent to you and the graphics? No, I think maybe the graphics only get sent to me. Actually.
We don't get the graphics.
We don't look. Okay. Because the whole point is you ask us, I mean, it would be a ridiculous part of this show if you asked us how many people are in the combined 11 and we'd all...
I mean, I don't get asked to do that. I do that off my own back, in fairness. It's not something that I've been told to do. I give myself that freedom. Creative player, number 10. Right then, let's have the guessing game then. How many Villa players make the combined 11? Because I'll spoil it for you. There's more Arsenal than Villa.
Three Villa players.
Oh, I was going to say three.
Yep, but you're both correct. Do you want to have a stab at the three?
Yeah, it's Ollie Watkins.
Ollie Watkins.
Correct.
Martinez.
Correct.
Yeah, nice.
And Doug.
Incorrect, because it excludes unavailable players.
Oh, come on.
You know the rules.
I do know the rules.
You know the rules.
Who would it be?
McGinn.
George, even it goes to you.
I don't think it will be McGinn. Would it be McGinn?
It is John McGinn.
Yeah,
so we've got Emi Martinez in goal, and all Arsenal back four of Ben White, Saliba, Gabriel and Zinchenko. Gabriel, the highest rated across that back four with 7.05. Midfield of Declan Rice with 7.35, Ødegaard 7.31 and John McGinn 7.07. And then a front three of Saka, Watkins and Martinelli. Saka leading the way there with 7.64. It's fair to say that team would win the league. But then we've just raved about Havertz and he's not in the combined 11. Which I never think is great.
Watkins with all those goal contributions has got to be in. Can we just, I'm going to put an official petition into who scored at the end of the season to be kinder to centre-backs, because not only is William Saliba continually disrespected, but Gabriel, did you say 7.05?
Yeah.
The man's conceded about...
That's highest back four.
He's conceded about four goals and has scored about six, and he's on 7.05.
In fairness, I mean, we're all of a vintage where player ratings, well, at least for me, were kind of built around Championship Manager, where even there, you know, strikers would get an average rating of like 8.8 if they were good, but centre-backs would be like early sevens. That'd be good. So I'm aligned that who scored have continued the magnificent tradition that we were all...
Of disrespecting centre-backs.
Yeah.
The one that surprised me in there is Martinelli. I'm surprised with Martinelli's average rating being 7, because it doesn't feel like, you know, it feels like if you're in Saka, goals and assists boost you up, but yet I don't feel like he's got the numbers. I could be wrong, but that's not what it's felt like to me. I'm surprised to see him there.
Six goals, 7. 4 assists.
6 goals. Okay. 10. Interesting.
Okay.
Let's do our predictions.
Where does that put him in the goal involvement table, Dan?
Oh, I don't know what you're asking. like I've got those numbers in front of me.
You've got them on your wall.
Yeah. The one that typed away all the way through the podcast. I'd expect you to have that up already, in all honesty. No. Let's do our predictions then. George, I'll come to you first.
I have got Arsenal 2, Villa 0.
Exactly the same as me. I've gone for 2-0. I don't like making that prediction, but I'm not seeing it.
That's your first predicted defeat for Villa this season, isn't it? I think.
I predicted them to lose to Man City in our discrete predictions as well. I did do that. I predicted 3-1 and then they obviously lost 4-1. Sam, what's your prediction?
I'm sorry. 3-0 to Arsenal.
You don't need to be sorry.
I am sorry.
That is higher than 2-0 there. So, you know, be sorry to the Villa fans a bit more so than myself. Just on the predictions league table, I've got it in front of me now. George still third with 169, 7 points last week. Jonathan got his and Sam's team 6 points last week, a low week. So they're on 196. I got a magnificent 11. So I'm now on 197, leading the predictions league again by a point. I now can actually say the top 10 goal involvements in the Premier League, and Martinelli is not in there.
What's the lowest number of goal contributions in the top 10? So what,
19. 10 got? Oh, so 9th, wow. And 10th have both got 19.
Right, Martinelli's miles off it then.
Saka.
No, Saka is...
Salah will be up there.
Saka's 6th. Salah's 2nd, to be fair.
Yeah, he Cole has Palmer somehow third. Got loads. Cole Palmer! Yeah,
25, Cole Palmer.
Wow. 24 penalties and an assist.
I was about to say 23 of them were penalties. Yeah, interesting to see some of the players that are in there. In fairness, Foden 21, another great goal from him in midweek. What a player Phil Foden is. Right, let's talk about Chelsea against Everton then. I'm going to start with Everton and the deductions, George. I feel like because of the EFL deductions, you may be more of an expert on this subject than us, perhaps. But another points deduction for Everton puts them further in the mire. What do you make of this?
It feels like every points deduction comes for a different reason and it's a different amount. I'm definitely no expert on the circumstance. Well, I mean, if we wanted to talk about Reading's points deductions, I might be able to shed some insight. But when it comes to Everton's, it kind of feels like even within Everton, they're a bit confused as to what's going on. But yes, they have their second deduction after their first deduction was deducted less. It's all very confusing. And we obviously saw Everton go through a really strong period of form after that first deduction. It felt like Sean Dyche successfully built like a real siege mentality at that point. It was very much like, we need to go out there and show everyone that, you know, we're better than this and, you know, rally against the injustice. And it worked. And then it didn't work because they pushed themselves out of danger. They got themselves in a position where they didn't look like relegation was likely. They then had that small reprieve and then the form kind of tailed off. So maybe this return to jeopardy will go some way to improve their form. We'll have to wait and see. But you know, it definitely feels to me like Dyche is someone who is a bit of a genius at kind of spinning narratives into results. Like he feels like a manager who is very much a man manager rather than a tactician. So we'll see how they bounce back. And you know, going to Chelsea at this moment, it's not the most daunting time to go to Stamford Bridge, is it? And it wouldn't surprise me if they see this as a really good opportunity where it's a bit of a free hit. If they do get beat, there's nothing really lost, but they'll fancy themselves to go and make it difficult.
He's going to mid-table Chelsea free hit.
So two things there. One, the statements Everton put out make me laugh so much. They spend three quarters of it thanking the commission and the board for working studiously to provide this judgment. They say we've worked strongly with you, we've cooperated, we've admitted fault, and we want to thank everybody for their hard work and what they feel is a just and fair result. And we're appealing. Every time at the end, and we're appealing. Always so
just,
funny
just,
to read.
You made me laugh there. I just snotted when you laughed.
In the effect of illness. Thanks everyone. Clearly. Great stuff. We disagree with it all. We're appealing. And two, speaking of Sean Dyche spinning narratives, I personally have fallen victim to a Sean Dyche spun narrative. Would you like to hear the story?
In the past, are we talking? Not this
second. In the past. So for 6 years, up until their relegation, I wrote a piece in the Southampton Football Club Matchday programme, which was the opposition tactical analysis for the day. It was a double page basically built towards getting the sort of average match going fan that doesn't necessarily watch too much of the other teams a little bit more of an understanding of like what they were going to be looking at that day. And I was very good at it. So I did it for 6 years. But one day, Sean Dyche had a little bit too much time pre-match and picked up the programme and read my analysis of his Burnley team. And he didn't agree with it. And this was a particularly windy day where Matej Vidra scored from 25 yards and a corner blew straight in because of the wind, and Southampton lost 2-0. And in that very Sean Dyche way, you know, he crows at victory. He sits there and he really revels in it. He sat there in the post-match press conference and he told everybody about this great piece of analysis he read in the pre-match pre-match.
Were you there? Were you in the press conference?
I was not in the room, thankfully. But all the Southampton local reporters were, and the Burnley guys were as well. He's like, oh, I read this piece in the programme. Fantastic. He said it was really, really damning of Charlie Taylor. He said that lots of the goals that we've been conceding recently have come from the left side, and that Southampton should look to work that right side and try to draw Charlie Taylor out of position. So I showed Charlie Taylor the piece and had him read it. And I was like, are you kidding me? I'm literally the material on the dressing room wall. That's what you can do, lads. Get out there and show them you're wrong. And I was that person. And he sat there and he said it all in the post-match. And then I was in the Burnley Express the next day. Southampton program fires up Burnley for win.
Amazing.
And then obviously, you know, it got referred upwards to the press officer at Southampton. It got referred to Ralf Hasenhüttl. It was a massive feature of the next pre-match press conference. And in most other scenarios, I think I probably would have lost my job because...
That's what I'm saying. And now you don't do it anymore. Do you still do it?
Well, they got relegated, no. So I got cut. But in most cases, football clubs just go, okay, don't need that rubbish. Bye. And I was very lucky that I had tenure with them a little bit to a point. And they were like, no, don't worry about it. It's fine. It went through an editor, went through... Three layers of checks. Hasenhüttl does not care for what it's worth. He got asked to read it. And he was like, I've got bigger things to deal with. Why are you asking me to read this program? Anyway, Sean Dyche.
Did you think about just reaching out to Sean and being like, Dyche, if you want me to do that for you, I can do loads of tactical pieces looking at opposition. And
I never want to speak to him.
Wow.
That's all right. That's fair enough.
It was a difficult week. Yeah. A difficult week. But there you go.
Interesting. Good that the Southampton end supported your press officer. Sounds like a reasonable man, which definitely is not the case at every single football club. I can certainly tell you that. Right then, what are we going to talk about now? We're going to talk about Cole Palmer. Cold Palmer, with his celebration that he still does every single time, George. I mean, we've just mentioned his goal contributions. For, you say first full season in the Premier League. You know, I think actually that's legitimate because he didn't really play very often. But for Manchester City to be getting the numbers that he's getting in what is a criminally poor side, really. You know, you have to give him a lot of credit. Although I don't think he'll go to the Euros.
Do you not? Or just because he didn't play a minute?
I didn't think
last time
he would anyway. I didn't have him in my 23 before that, really? But that sealed the deal, really. I think he should go. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah, I think he should definitely go, personally. But I think Southgate not picking him for a single minute in either of those last two games might tell us quite a lot about...
It would mean Maddison not going, I think, if Palmer was to go, and I don't see that.
Depends if they get 26 or not, right? Because they are looking at that.
Yeah, they're trying, aren't they? Southgate complained about that previously, that 26 was too many, and now suddenly he wants 26 again.
Yeah, I don't know. I want him to go. I'd probably take him over Maddison right now, because I don't think Maddison's been in great form since returning from injury. I mean, Palmer is... He's been a revelation. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like he's been so good. And I think I was one of the many, many people who kind of thought, Chelsea, what are you doing? Like, if Manchester City are willing to sell Cole Palmer, then he's probably not a player that you necessarily want to buy. But they made us all look silly. I mean, we should also point out that of his 16 Premier League goals this season, 8 of them have been penalties. So not the 19 that we mentioned a second ago.
It's an eye test, though, isn't it, as well?
It is. He's absolutely brilliant. And he's 21 years old, and he's creative, and he scores goals, and he's aggressive. And, you know, he plays in a way, you know, you look at the last player with a big reputation that City let go in Jadon Sancho. And... I think Sancho is probably more talented, a more talented footballer than Palmer, but the way that Palmer seems to just kind of aggressively go after his opportunities is very different to at least the Sancho we saw at Manchester United. I think in that first spell at Dortmund, you couldn't have leveled that accusation at him at all. He's a player that is brilliant to watch. And you know, as we said, it, when you think where Chelsea would be without him, given they're only mid-table now with this player, 21-year-old, having a standout season, it would be pretty bleak.
I mean, quick word on Chelsea's form. They're now 7 unbeaten, Sam. And this is why I made the prediction that I made last week. They get a great win against Manchester United, scenes at the end. But whenever, a bit like Manchester United themselves, whenever they get a result, I never think they'll follow that up with a consecutive victory. And, you know, time and time again, they don't. And they didn't last weekend.
They didn't, no, they didn't. Pochettino had a few words to say about that. You can see he's getting frustrated. But it is a team of very young and inexperienced players. So, inconsistencies are going to happen. The problem is that the squad that they've got and the build and the age of the squad they've got is not appropriate for their level of aspiration. You might need a few more players like Jorginho in there to steady the ship at these tough times. And I'd say that sort of half jokingly, but also half not. Like, that's kind of when the experience and the veteran stuff kicks in and they don't have very much of it. And what little of it they did have has essentially expired this season in the form of Thiago Silva, you know, where he's been ousted from the team, correctly, because his performances were becoming a genuine liability. So this, look, every football manager player experiences this. They build a team of wonder kids, they spend all their money on five-star potential, and then they wonder why their team flits from wins to losses and wins to losses. And the answer is the team is too young and inexperienced and immature to sustain a period of form, particularly in this very, very difficult Premier League. They are atrocious defensively. That also undermines them a lot, right? In the same way that it undermines Manchester United and everything good that they might do in the attacking third. How can you be consistent when you are that problematic defensively? It just means that a really bad day will go horribly for you.
No foundations.
No foundations. You might score two, and that should be enough to win most games, but not when you defend like they do. So they've got a lot to figure out over the summer. And it's not just about buying more players that are really good. It's about buying the right players that can glue this stuff together.
Yeah, I agree with you. And to be honest, I think whoever was in charge this season, I don't think the season would be much different to what it is now for people that do want Poch out in the Chelsea fan base. Right then, predictions for this one, Sam. Come to you first.
0-0.
0-0 is gone for. I thought about 0-0 as well. I nearly went for that.
I just said Chelsea are atrocious defensively and stuff, but like,
it's the
unstoppable force meets the immovable object. And it's Everton's goal-scoring inability that is really swaying this.
I've gone for 1-1. George, I bet you've done the same, haven't you?
No, 2-1 Chelsea.
2-1 to Chelsea. Okay, let's do the rest of our prediction. Then I can stop coughing anytime soon. Right, Newcastle v Spurs, please, George.
2-2.
I've gone for 2-1 to Tottenham, Sam. 2-2.
I have gone for a Desmond, yeah. I'm with George on that one.
Okay, Brentford, Sheffield United. I've gone for 3-1 to Brentford, Sam.
2-1 to Brentford.
2-1 to Brentford. George?
I've kicked off with a double Desmond. 2-2 again.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear me.
The old Dan Bardell, Sheffield United 2-2.
We were like, I mean, I did predict every game, but apart from that, to be 3-1 last week, but they didn't seem to do me too bad in the end. Man City against Luton, please, George.
Have you missed one out? Burnley Brighton's on my list.
Oh, I
next.
Have missed Burnley v Brighton out. I do apologise. But Burnley v Brighton, please, George.
2-1 to Burnley.
2-1 to Burnley. You always feel like you predict Burnley to win a lot. You do, Sam?
That's why he's bottom. Burnley 2, Brighton 3.
I've gone for Burnley 0, Brighton 2. Manchester City v Luton, please, Sam.
4-0 to City.
Whoa, me too. George?
Damn it.
3-1 City.
3-1 to City. Forest Wolves is probably one of the most 1-1 games I've ever seen in my life. Have you two both 1-1 as well?
Yep.
Excellent stuff. Bournemouth against Manchester United, please, George.
2-1 Bournemouth.
I've gone for 3-1 to Bournemouth, Sam.
Oh, Desmond.
2-2 again, right. Liverpool v Palace, please, Sam.
3-1 to Liverpool.
I've gone 2-1 to Liverpool. George?
3-0 Liverpool.
3-0 to Liverpool. West Ham against Fulham, please, George.
2-1 West Ham.
3-1 West Ham here. And Sam?
2-0 to West Ham.
2-0 to West Ham. I've got ended. Oh, I've got a few 3-1s in there again, but like I said, I didn't do me too much harm last week. Jonathan Wilson was the victor in Manchester United shots being last week. I think he said it was it 27 or 20? I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was the victor. Manchester United away at Bournemouth. How many shots against are they going to have this week, Sam?
24.
I'm going to go for 26, George.
22.
22 low. Okay, then. That does us for this week's edition of Edge of the Box. Thank you to both of you for joining me today, and thank you to everyone for listening and watching as well. Do all the things that help the channel grow, like subscribing, liking, all that good stuff, please. And wherever you're taking in this podcast, if you can do anything you think might help, that would be absolutely great. Enjoy all the football at the weekend, and tell all your friends and family about the show.